Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Sheila.
And we're here to wrap up Season 3 of Criminal Minds, the first non-Mandy Patinkin season. And it's not that I don't miss him, because of course I miss him, but, you know, it all gives a lot more focus to Aaron, which is what we always wanted all along, so I am kind of happy to see that.
As it turns out,
that's what we secretly wanted this whole time. Just more Aaron Hotchner. But you know what? We'll get there. Let's jump right into our first episode this week.
Which Tabula Rasa.
An episode which I find notable for one reason and one reason only. I'm interested to hear you complain about how it's a worse version of your favorite episode of television ever. Are you absolutely baffled about what I meant by that?
No, I'm not. It is season three, episode four of Babylon 5, and it's called Gethsemane.
Yep. There you go.
Oh, just no. No,
sure.
No, I know.
Just making sure you know what I was getting at.
My most favorite
episode of a television show ever.
Yes, and I can talk some more about it when we come up to the Brad Dourif episode.
Of
Criminal Minds.
But just for the record, Brad Dourif starred in the episode as a priest who is having nightmares and being haunted by visions of a murder. And we learn that the way you punish any truly serious personality defect-based crime in the world of Criminal Minds is that they use their future science to erase your personality and input a new personality who will value only helping people.
Yeah, and he's not a priest. He's a brother.
A monk. Yes,
he's a monk. Yeah, there's a big difference there.
And he's been a serial killer, and now he's a monk. Yeah. And it opens up the biggest question in the thing. one of the best questions you'll ever hear, which is, how can you atone for something you don't remember?
Yeah, it is. Oh, I mean, we could spend a whole.
No, we'll talk about Gethsemane later.
I don't know. I mean, we could talk about Gethsemane now. We could talk about it later. Probably it does belong here because it is.
It is. It does come up in this episode.
Because the issue, you know, is not. It sort of comes up here. Of course, needless to say, I mean, this is a shadow of
it's Michael a fourth Strzok. Generation video copy.
Copy, yeah.
Of what he was trying to
video,
say.
Yeah. Maybe even Betamax, you know?
Oh, my God. It's like...
Maybe it's on tape, right?
whatever themes J. Michael Straczynski was getting at in that is completely absent here. Like, that's not what this episode is about. It's just about putting them through a bit of a bind, which is, I mean, how do you convict a man in court if there's no evidence left against him and he probably doesn't even remember his crimes?
Yeah, okay, and... wait a sec. Yeah, may I read the synopsis?
Oh, yeah, of course.
When a suspected serial killer wakes up from a coma and insists he doesn't remember the crimes he committed 4 years early in Roanoke, Virginia, the BAU relies on brain fingerprinting to determine if his claims are true.
And I got to say, what gets me is, I think the first step one is, how do you convict a man of that crime if he may not remember his things? Well, first off, you don't drag him in front of a judge 30 minutes after he wakes up from a coma.
Right.
There's literally in this episode, I know everything is temporally compressed on this show, and I make fun of that a lot, because every killer is a spree killer. But in this show, they're like, he wakes up out of a coma, and one day later, he's in court.
Like, I mean, anybody who's been in shall we go back and watch? Now, the Stephen King?
Yes, the Dead
Christopher
Zone.
Christopher Walken, the Dead Zone, right? Let's go to the Dead Zone.
Well, my point was going to be, like, I once had a really, really bad flu, and I was just out of it for 4 days. And after being out of it for 4 days, I had a little trouble getting up and walking around. Famously, people who've been in comas cannot walk for months after being in a coma.
Yeah, well, I mean, they try and do exercises and everything with the body. Yeah, and they
but
do
that's
all those things.
They do exercise with the body to keep them from developing blood clots and to keep their muscles from atrophying. But that doesn't mean you'll remember how to walk.
Mm-mm.
Like, the body hasn't been used in 4 years.
The hands haven't been used. The feet
like
haven't.
The idea that this guy is getting up and walking around and clubbing people and driving cars is madness.
Absolutely.
Like, it's just so crazy. Because there's an interesting idea here of, is he faking it or is he not? Like, I like that idea. But why did you decide you had to pair it with a courtroom drama? You know, it could just have been about them coming to interview him and doing a series of interviews with him to see if he was faking or if he really remembered it. You didn't have to pair it with all of this courtroom nonsense.
Yeah, well, somebody decided it was a good idea at the time.
I mean,
you can see how, because the issue is, I mean, they do vaguely mention it in passing, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, but we know he did it all. And
there's no question about whether.
And then but they're assuming there would be something. And then they go through this phony. Well, maybe he didn't do it and we got the wrong person. Did we get the wrong person?
Have you ever gotten the wrong person? Just once. I would like them to get the wrong person. I have to be like, oh, whoops. They've never gotten the wrong person.
Well, you know, it's Criminal Minds. It's
they're infallible, don't you know?
Don't you know? I mean, that was so kind of bizarre in the brain fingerprinting. And as I said, somebody must have watched Straczynski. Because, of course, maybe they didn't because it would be logical, right? But,
yeah.
You know, and so then, of course, but what happens is when they did the brain fingerprinting, because they do it with electrodes and things like that, mm-hmm. they do it with electricity and they have to, you know, scan the brain, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Of course,
they've triggered the brain to be active again.
Yeah, and he starts remembering the things he did.
You know, so it's very nice. They're chasing after him because one of them says, I think he's starting to remember. I can't remember who says that. So I think he's starting to remember.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Aaron. And so they go after him and they're trying to figure out maybe he's going to go kill someone. No, he doesn't. He goes to his first and then he confesses.
Yeah. It's a decent ending because it's literally, he's not going on a rampage. He just honestly wants to know who he was. And then he's like, well, I gotta. And the weird part is you can read it that because he's had the freedom of just living as a guy who wasn't haunted by all of this stuff the way he has been his whole life, you can actually read it that now he feels guilty in a way he didn't before.
Yeah.
Because he's coming into these horrible things he's done almost as a bystander, almost as someone viewing it the same way everybody else is. And I think that's legitimately a nice touch for the end of the episode.
Yes.
They don't do the obvious thing.
And the episode, you know, and the episode that was, you know, and so he then, you know, he just pleads guilty and that's that. Yeah. And Reed stops the father of one of the victims from
executing him in the courthouse steps.
Executing him on the courthouse steps.
Yeah.
And
that's nice.
And then brings the daughter's necklace to him. And
it's a nice wrap up. Although I got to say, there we get a weird moment where the show, I'm not going to say it blames exactly his birth mother for his crimes, but it comes pretty close to blaming his birth mother for his crimes.
Shall we get started? First of all, geez, you don't look Indian to me.
Yeah, he doesn't really look super half Indian, does he?
Or she is sort of like, okay, well, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe down one of the southern, yeah, okay. So because that's another side thing. Why is he so interested in all of these Indian rituals? You know, they
Yeah, it's
have to
because it turns
find
out
out.
he's he found out he was half native, and
Okay,
when he
first of
paid
all,
someone to do his genealogy.
okay, I finally finished. I will quote John Douglas here because
Okay.
I finally finished his The Cases That Haunt Us.
All right.
And what he says in all of those things is, first of all, nobody out of the clear blue starts killing.
Nope.
And that's it. And doesn't become a serial killer without there being a long history of
History of
stuff
precedent leading up to that act.
leading up to that act.
So
Now,
the idea
his
that he went, like he was unhappy in his life, and then he got rejected by his
mother, and then
birth
he
mother,
starts
and he's
killing.
like, I'm just going to start killing dark-haired women. Like,
No,
really?
really.
No.
No. Now, and it goes against everything Douglas said in The Cases That Haunt Us.
Yeah.
I,
And
because I
it
guess
also
they're.
goes against everything we know about serial killers.
Yeah, they just don't because his the only thing his birth mother did was give him up for adoption.
Yeah.
That's
No,
it.
there had
And
to be this
when he
whole
was a baby
extensive childhood
of
of
abuse.
abuse and horrible things happening. I mean, he is putting up him for adoption. Can he now s rationalize that as the thing that ruined his life? Yeah, but it's not actually the thing that ruined his life. All the stuff that happened to him before, after he got adopted, was the life-ruining stuff. He can just imagine that it all would have been better had he not been adopted, had she kept him.
Like he could blame his birth mother,
But it's weird for the
but
show to seem that it's coming on the side of blaming his
for the
birth mother.
BAU to have
Yeah.
this show that somehow or another, like have them say that somehow or another, it was his
Had the trauma over the adoption that led to all this.
the trauma of meeting his birth mother and having her reject him. Yes, that wouldn't have done well, would have started him on this killing spree without going into, other things, right?
Yeah.
Without at least attenuating that kind of the idea that the show leaves you with, without attenuating it with, because that really bothered me with this
It's
show.
troubling.
It was really troubling the way that poor woman, and she came. I mean, did she feel bad? Well, of course. And the whole time he was in a coma, she went every week
Yeah.
to see him and read to him when he was in a coma.
Yep.
And she's and enough that she would blame herself.
Oh,
The
absolutely.
BAU doesn't have to blame her.
No, she's already obviously felt responsible for what happened.
Well, because she gave him up for
Yeah,
adoption.
exactly. Like
That's
she.
where that's the thing that she feels bad about.
Yeah.
And then again, I mean, but there are so many women who give children up for adoption who
Yeah.
don't tell. That there's something that just came up the other day. This woman found out, they were friends, found out how she ended up working in the same place across the country.
As
As her sister, her biological sister, but
it's always so weird when that happens.
and the two sisters, like there are two sisters, so all of a sudden she's got a family.
Yeah.
But two children were given up. I think two children were given up for adoption, and the mother never mentioned it.
Wow.
Never mentioned it.
Never mentioned that she had a sister that she gave up for adoption.
That she ever gave up children for adoption, nor did the father, because they have the
Wow.
same birth parents.
That's
And
amazing.
this, yeah, and this sometimes, I mean, this goes back to, but I was going, God, in the, because these women are maybe your age, like in their, or
Yeah, I
whatever.
get it.
So you would think that there wouldn't be such
Stigma around it?
a stigma around it, except it's in the US, so
Well,
who
yeah, there is
knows?
that.
Or they would have been in a religious family, so they got pregnant before, they got married. I didn't read the whole story or anything like
Yeah,
that,
but the point is
but
they
I
gave up
want.
the first kid for adoption, and
Yeah.
then later they had another daughter and
Three.
never mentioned three other daughters.
And never mentioned.
And never mentioned daughter number one.
Yeah.
Wow. That is crazy.
And as she said, it's very strange what she said, because people would often say that we were a lot alike. Like, she became friends with this girl.
Yeah, and then later finds out they're sisters.
And they find out that they are biological sisters, not half-sisters.
Just sisters, yeah.
And, you know, couples did. I mean, if you were Roman Catholic and you got knocked up, you know.
But there's no reason they wouldn't stay together. So, yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I think that haunt people when they are forced by all of those other reasons to give up children that they don't want to give up. I mean, I had a good friend in Ottawa. And she never got over it.
Oof. Although, weirdly, it sounds like this people did, in fact, get over it.
Yeah, never.
Because they stayed together, they had other kids, and they just never brought up that, oh, you got a sister out there somewhere.
Yeah.
That is the weird part, though. Like, because you have to imagine there's some psychology going on down there. Like, some not necessarily PTSD, but something like it going on down there to not bother mentioning that you have a sister out there somewhere.
Yeah.
That is the slightly weird part.
Yeah, well, you know, you close it off, you put it in a little box, and you shove it away, and you didn't want to do it, you had to do it, so therefore, and there's nothing you can do about it now.
Yeah.
Right?
You just focus on what's in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't dwell on the past, you focus on what's in front of you, and there are people like that.
Yeah, and now and the rest of it. So, yeah. although I would say that some... You know, the funny thing is that if you were to, what I would say is that so many people do that, but all of those things bleed out somehow or another. It's just how would they bleed out. But these girls were all quite happy to find out they were sisters. So
there you go. Yeah. And so the real thing here is, what is the story? Like, what is the story with this guy's adoptive parents? That's what I want to know. Like, that's what they should be focusing on if you want to know what happened here.
Yeah. Only because this is Criminal Minds. Yeah. Like that's the strange thing, right? In Babylon 5,
right?
Because we will talk about it. In Gethsemane, we might as well talk about that now and not wait for the Brad Dourif, because then we can talk about some of his other stuff.
The man's a brilliant actor. Yeah.
Yeah, the man's a brilliant actor, starting with the first time I ever saw Wise Blood.
Yeah, the man's had an incredible 40-year career as an actor.
Yeah. So anyway, but in that episode, and you can just see the difference. J. Michael Straczynski thinks, right? and he puts this all together and he understands. So you don't, because what happens, of course, is that he has been brainwiped. They have brought in a psychic. Mm-hmm. The families of his victims have brought in a psychic from another race, because there are all sorts of rules
about
for human
what
telepaths.
Psychics can do, yeah.
Human telepaths. So they can't get a human telepath to do it, so they have to hire a Centauri telepath to just tweak his brain enough, which is what the brain fingerprinting did in this case.
Yeah. To make the memory start coming back.
That he starts to have these flashes, right? And he starts to have he sees these screams. And so then, of course, he has the computer running and puts together some of the flashes. He puts it all together because that's what he has become in this brotherhood. Like, he's a monk and they do all sorts of data work.
Yeah.
And so he searches.
They are the modern day scribes, if you will.
And then he finds out that this is who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And now what's interesting is that it does take the same take, right? That he does still doesn't remember it.
Yeah.
Like, he does not really remember what he did. He just knows that this is him and this is what he did. And of course, he is now very religious. And his favorite passage from the Bible is Jesus at Gethsemane when he's saying, can't this cup be taken away from me, right? Yeah. Like I don't want to go through with this. And then
he knows what has to happen, and he's like, do I flee, do I renounce, or do I face judgment?
Or do I go through with it, right? Yeah. And so Jesus decides to go through with it, and of course, the brother, what was his name, brother?
Oh, yeah, well, just the head, head monk. It's not important what the character's name is.
Not the head monk. He's not.
Which one?
No, the Brad Dourif character.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay, so, but he, you know, and of course he's always wondered whether he would have the guts to do the same thing. Whether he would have enough faith to do the same thing. And when he finds out, but that is the whole thing at the end, right? With the head monk Theo, the head monk, I remember, that's Theo, right?
Yeah, the head of the order.
The head of the order, but you can just see him. But Theo, how can I ask for forgiveness if I don't remember what I did? You know? And there's Theo saying, but God knows.
God
what
knows.
You did.
Yeah. And that's
God
the only
will
thing.
Forgive you if you are repentant.
It's a beautiful episode of television.
Oh, I watch that and I cry every freaking time.
No, it's a beautiful episode of television because.
Yeah.
Brad. Well, it's because Brad Dourif it's great writing, but it's because he's such an incredible actor.
Yeah, that he can pull this whole thing off and not for one minute.
Yeah.
Do you disbelieve? It's no. So easy to suspend your belief.
Disbelief. Yeah.
Your disbelief when you're watching that episode.
It's an incredible hour of television.
Yeah, okay. And I'm sorry, guys, the listening audience, you all have to go watch Babylon 5.
But, no, Babylon 5 is amazing, yeah.
But the ending of this episode, right, mm-hmm. because we're talking about a serial killer, right? Yeah. The end of this episode, so he gets killed, right? Brad Dourif gets
Brad
killed.
Brad Dourif, yes, yeah.
And so the head of the station,
mm-hmm.
Bruce
Boxleitner,
yeah, is talking about, you know, is going on and on about how hard it is to forgive people and why did these people kill this guy and blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. Security guy, of course, thinks they should all be hung, but killed. And
yeah,
but an eye for an eye, you know. And anyway, so Bruce Boxleitner is going on and on. Captain Sheridan is going on and on about, you know, sort of why couldn't they forgive him and blah 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 blah. And then in walks the killer.
Yep.
And he is now going to enter the order.
Yeah, because his memory has been erased as well.
Yes, because he pleaded guilty. Yeah. He didn't. And Brother Theo asked for him specially, and he was going back home to Earth to the Order to start training. Yeah. So of course, Captain Sheridan.
There you go.
Captain Sheridan doesn't want to, you know, doesn't want to shake his hand or anything, right?
It's troubling.
There's Brother Theo going, you were talking about how forgiveness is so difficult.
Well, here's your opportunity.
This is it, right? This is
what it looks like.
This is what forgiveness looks like.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's the thing. And because it comes down to, and this is the thing that this episode touches on but never grapples with really, which is consciousness. Like, if you don't have the same memories, are you the same person?
Yeah.
And that is what it comes down to in the Babylon 5, because they're like, what is identity? What is consciousness? Are you the same person if you don't have the same memories? Did Brad Dourif have a murderous soul, or did that all die when his personality was erased?
Yes. In other words, in Babylon 5, it is a true tabula rasa. And with this guy, if they hadn't done the brain fingerprinting,
he might have been.
Except,
yeah,
yeah, But because he didn't have new, see what happens in Babylon 5.
He's a whole new personality is added on.
They give them all new memories from birth. They give them families. They give them this. They give them that. Right.
That all set them down the line to deciding they were going to help humanity.
Yeah. Whereas in this case, what happens?
You know, there's something wrong with you.
He knows that he has no memories, so he doesn't know who he is.
Yeah. Whereas, and you would have to build an entire new personality from scratch. Mm-hmm. At age 45, mm-hmm. which seems like it would be rough.
Anyway, you know, so it's,
it's an episode, like I said, that is notable mostly for its ability to make us think of better television. That is the greatest achievement of this episode, but it really does make you think of truly great television.
Truly, truly, when you grapple with an issue.
Yeah.
You know, because, that may be one of the things that bugs us most about Criminal Minds is that it takes an issue, it tries sort of to grapple with it, but it sort of throws it out there.
Yeah.
It never
really takes that deep dive that these issues require.
Yeah. And trust me, the Babylon 5 episode was a basically what you call a one-off episode.
Yeah.
Like, it did not further.
No, that's all, everything we talked about is all handled in 40 minutes, beginning to end.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the main plot. It has nothing to do, none of that comes into this episode, except that we learn about mind wipes.
Well, yeah, and that does become
doesn't
important.
That matter.
There.
Yeah, well, it does become, you know, it figures in later on.
Yeah.
But, you know. Essentially, and what Psy-Cops can actually do.
Yes. But that's a whole other, Babylon 5 cast, okay? We're not going to talk about how great Bester is.
Okay, here's something else, okay? Here's something else, right? Please. It's so funny. Well, yeah, that's Walter Koenig as Bester.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to watch it if you're a sci-fi person.
Oh, yeah, it's the best sci-fi show.
Right? But what happens here, right, is... when I'm thinking, what were you saying? This is not okay.
We're not doing a Babylon 5 cast. We're not going to start talking about the politics of the Psy-Cops.
I know what we're going to say is that just about everything you see on the internet, on YouTube about Criminal Minds, right, is fan stuff. It's just all fan. They all just love it. There's no discussion of it. There's no discussion of the plots. There's no criticism. Everything is wonderful. Whatever they ever did is wonderful. When all these people left, it's all wonderful. We're a little more cynical than that, right?
We're cynical people, though. But yes, I think they've given us reason to be.
However, if we did a Babylon 5 podcast,
we would be exactly like those fan people. I know. That's 100% true.
You know, we would probably bring up the odd, because there are some problems. Yeah,
there's an odd problem here and there, but we would be much less critical.
Oh my God, we'd be sitting there just raving.
Well, the weird
and ranting.
Part is, I think we'd go in depth as much, but we'd be going in depth about how great it was.
And we'd be talking about, you know, how they're dealing with all of these different religions and how we find the different aspects and the way that he structured the entire society. And of course, you know, the comparison, it sort of was like discussing the past, but it's not.
No, not at all.
Not at all. And I hate to tell you, but I tell you, given the political climate in the United States these days, CSI Miami looks pretty good. CSI Miami is off over some stupid channel, right?
And, it's a bad show, but compared to,
but it's
what
not,
we're getting
it's not,
these days.
Well, no, it's not compared to TV. Because I just watched an episode where they take on, one of these militia groups.
Wow.
They take on child abuse. They take on a lot more and it probably at the time, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, we were so taken in by David Caruso.
Maybe you don't notice the stuff they were doing.
But and a of course I always remember like the battered women syndrome.
Yeah.
They dealt with that over like a whole season or whatever, because his brother's wife, right, mm-hmm. was being abused by her new boyfriend, and she wouldn't deal with it, right?
Yeah, and David Caruso couldn't just go in and arrest him or beat him up, so
because he's the IA person.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's out to get Caruso. No, to complicate matters, but
it was they did some interesting stuff in those early seasons before the show went nuts. But anyway, to refocus us slightly.
Sorry.
I'm supposed to be the one going off on bizarre tangents. Fun fact, though, Gethsemane is going to come up again on Criminal Minds. Not that episode, but the actual story of Gethsemane when we get to the Luke Perry episode of all things.
Of all things, yes.
And R.I.P. Luke Perry. We found out we lost you today, and you will always live in our hearts because you were in an amazing, amazing performance on Oz. Yeah. He was on one season of Oz as a crooked preacher who wound up in jail and tried to keep preaching in jail, and it didn't go well for him.
No.
Oh, it didn't go well for him. But it's a fantastic season of television. Oz as a show has its issues, but it had some amazing performances, and Luke Perry was definitely one of them.
OZ.
Yeah.
Just in case, people, you have to go to HBO to find that. And by the way, everybody who's listening.
Yeah.
I have only watched it once.
Oz?
I cannot.
Yeah, me too.
Bring myself, like, I can't.
You can't go back.
Do it. It was so, and I still remember, because we couldn't wait for the next season.
I know.
And we watched it, and it was so real and gritty.
Real and gritty and horrible and too intense, and yeah.
It was so tense, right?
And just imagine that Christopher Maloney was doing that and SVU at the same time. That's madness.
Yeah, that's madness.
Like those two characters he was doing at the same time. And if you haven't seen the show, you don't know what we're talking about, but trust us. Chris Maloney is also very talented.
Yes. And no, I mean, Oz is worth watching.
It is.
And as I say, it's really worth watching, but
just the one time.
Because the problem is that we watched it 1 week at a time, and then we had 10 months. Between the season.
So you could decompress. I think that show would be a little hard to binge.
To binge watch.
It would be too rough on you. Yeah.
It would, you know, because it doesn't have anything that it's
you never get to take a breath in the world of Oz.
No, it's like watching The Wire.
Yeah.
As well, right? Which gave us Idris Elba.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. Oz gave us J.K. Simmons. And
yeah. Oh my God, J.K. Simmons is the head of the militia.
The Nazis.
Yeah. Oof. Oh, the white supremacists.
All right, so to refocus us briefly once again.
You can tell how impressed we were with this episode.
It's an episode that keeps drifting off. Because, I mean, it makes us, and that's what this episode does. It makes us think about better television. Because, let's mention one last thing in this episode before we move on. Hey! Once again, a scene that's going to make no sense when we go back to when we do the flashback to Garcia's introduction. A scene where Derek doesn't know who she is.
Yeah, I know.
We get a flashback to her being just a plain lady who doesn't make a fuss, and Derek's like, "Who's the new girl?" Because again, this is all in a reality where he doesn't know that she was hired from being a criminal to do crime stuff for them.
Yeah, 4 years. Yeah,
It's only four years before. Mandy, of course, is on vacation during the flashbacks, and and even more because it's one of Reed's first cases they mention. And even more entertaining, though, is in this episode. It's this episode, right, where where she just casually abuses her power, or at least threatens to abuse her power. That That Garcia, when they're looking into like the adoption records, is like, oh, you're hassling me on the phone? Well, I'm going to use my role with the FBI to ruin your life because you bothered me on the because you
But
wouldn't
you
give me
won't give me
information
what I need.
quickly enough. Gee, so I've illegally hacked into your system. Now I'm going to ruin your life. Jesus Christ, Penelope, maybe you're joking, but also
She
don't
wasn't
say that.
joking.
She
She
wasn't
wasn't.
joking.
She wasn't joking. I mean, there's no way that
Penelope's a
you could
monster.
see that. She was in this episode.
In this episode. All right. So let's move on
As
to the
we know,
final.
this was an alternate reality episode because Derek didn't even know who she was.
I know. All right, let's move on to the next
So
episode,
fun.
which is the final episode of the season.
And it's a cliffhanger.
Ooh. Synopsis.
When the latest in a series of shootings takes place in New York City, the BAU sets out to determine if the crimes are the work of one killer or a team. Meanwhile, Hotch endures a tense reunion with an old acquaintance, and JJ makes a surprising announcement.
Okay, well, first off, it's not a tense reunion at all. They're very happy to see each other. The only tension is caused by the fact that the FBI is thinking of firing her and replacing her with Derek.
Yeah.
But that's not a tense reunion.
No.
That's like tension between Derek and Aaron.
And as
So.
JJ and Prentice point out, geez, she looks like his
Exactly like his wife.
ex-wife. Okay.
Yeah.
Or his ex-wife.
His ex-wife at this point, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do look uncannily similar.
Well, now we know that Aaron Hotchner has a type.
I know. He has a very, very distinct, strict type
Yes.
of petite blonde ladies. But yeah, let's find out what his mother looked like. But anyway. Such a mean thing for me to say. I should not have said that. Seriously,
Well,
though.
neither of my sons married girls that look like me, so
So yeah,
I
that's
guess I
you're
did okay.
probably a more healthy parenting system.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we don't know what Aaron's mother looked like. I'm just saying when the two ladies he was serious about are so close to identical,
Yeah,
something
it
to
would
look at. So this is an episode of television that is so frustrating for a bunch of reasons, and one of them is, I mean, this is something I just want to ask. How, because there are 10,000 cops in New York City. How many subway stations are there?
Well, it probably is bigger than the Paris. And when I had my situation, what he said was we had 189 kilometers of platform space and we can't monitor them all.
And that's fine,
So that would
but.
be the same thing in New York that they would have, it would be in miles, of course. So say 200 or 300 miles of platform space.
And you say that, right? But my point is that's you can't be monitoring them all the time because you don't have the resources. But after two people have been shot in the head on a subway platform
Yeah.
by what they think is but why by what video evidence suggests is the same person,
Yeah.
then you can apply the necessary resources to have two cops on every train platform until they catch this guy.
Well, as I said, if you
There's
didn't,
no way they can't.
no, yeah, and as I said, they did it in Paris. If you
Yeah, and they did it
if
in
there
Paris
wasn't a cop,
afterwards.
yeah,
Yeah.
if they didn't have a cop on the if you didn't have a cop walking your subway train, at one station, one would get on. Like it was just it was con there was constant cops you
Yeah.
for probably 2 months. You
And
just
that wasn't even a serial killer murdering people every second day.
No,
Like
that was just a
the
hassler. And this guy, yeah, clearly, right? Or as Mount Joe as David Rossi says, well, it's about time.
Yeah, I'm like,
When Aaron
how?
says, they've called us in, and David Rossi
What
says,
took them so
what took them
long?
so long, right?
Five people dead in 10 days?
Yeah, and I mean every and nobody in New York would have complained about cops being around because they
No, of
know
course
this
not.
idiot is there. Yeah.
And honestly, it's weird that they're like Son of Sam all over again, but what they don't, and this is something the show forgets a lot, they don't seem to understand that, like, the public would react badly to this kind of murder going on. Like, there was a concrete dip in the amount of, what do you call it? In, like, gross domestic product around the Washington, D.C. area while the snipers were out there. Because a lot of people weren't going to work.
Yeah.
People were staying home to not get shot on their commute. Right? People were, like, staying in. It was a whole thing that it actually caused problems for all of Washington, D.C., that these snipers were out there. And I feel like, first off, people just every 2 days getting shot in the head on a subway, and no one thinks it's gang-related. Like, you say, well, there's 300 murders every year in New York. Yeah, because people get robbed, or people kill, criminals kill other criminals, or because a person who clearly wanted to kill someone killed someone.
Yeah.
The idea that people, that there would be a for no reason mass murderer running around the subways of New York and everyone is just going about their day-to-day lives like nothing is happening? No, that's not how humans work. That's certainly not how New York City works. There is no way that there would be this blasé response to this action. There's
because,
just no way.
I mean, because when Bernard Goetz was doing it, he was shooting criminals, supposedly.
No, he just did it once. He just shot criminals once, and it freaked everybody out. But Son of Sam was just shooting people on the street. And the whole friggin' city, and they didn't shut down, but the whole city freaked out. And everyone was paranoid, and everyone was looking over their shoulders. It's like there was none of this, oh, now we're all just walking around on the subway. And when you find out that these murders, people get shot in the subway, why aren't people, like, only taking the subway in pairs? And why aren't people super careful all the time?
Yeah.
Like, we're asked to believe that people are like, well, there's a, every 2 days, someone's going to get shot in the head on the subway, and it's always a guy dressed in a hoodie. Why is anyone on a hoodie, in a hoodie, allowed on a subway at this point?
Yeah. You know, or, you know, even on the street.
On the street. Why aren't people being harassed for wearing hoodies?
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing that would happen if this were actually happening. Like, but the show often, it exists in a world where the media only exists when the plot requires it to. Where it's like they have this idea that there is no external awareness of these crimes unless that's a plot element. And I'm like, that's not how people work. That's definitely not how the government works. And that sure as hell isn't how New York works.
Yeah. No, this would have been, I mean, the mayor would have been up in arms, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, we watch Blue Bloods. We know how a police commissioner works in New York City.
They're
Come on.
Shutting this thing down.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying you can turn off the subway. You can't, because it moves, like, more people than any other subway system other than, like, Toronto in the entire world.
Yeah.
Right? So you can't shut it down, because the city would grind to a halt, but there would be cops everywhere. Like, and they would be swarming every single station until they caught this guy. And then of course, the guy would just resort to shooting people on the street, which is what the terrorist cell does.
Yeah.
But they would be, the idea that they needed the FBI to tell them this is crazy.
Well, plus you have, and you have this whole thing because, of course, this old flame of Hotch's, right? From Scotland Yard, she was a dual American citizen, so that's how she could be in the FBI.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the whole business with her and not letting them go out and be on the streets or not calling them in sooner. Why? Because she's got an ego and she's going to be replaced. All of this kind of weird plot stuff.
Yeah, all the political behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah, it just takes away from the horror of what this particular crime is. Because
and the reality
this is
of
art.
What the situation is.
Yeah, and it would have been better served if we'd seen, it would have been a tenser episode. You know, and then, and it just seems, I guess that's it. The last two episodes are a bit problematic, but and this one, it's like, okay, and then the contrived ending where, oh my,
we're talking God. About the end. Well, we'll talk about the we'll ending when there, we get to the ending. Get, Let's okay. focus on the show for right now.
On the yeah, whole
just
show,
the idea that like their response to this is not only dumb, it's one of the most unrealistic police responses I've ever seen
in this show.
Because again, this is the stuff we've actually lived through with the Beltway snipers. We know how human beings respond to this kind of behavior. And we lived through this with Son of Sam. So the idea that like the FBI would just be allowed to figure it out and, oh, well, we're investigating body language of the various people and blah, 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 blah. Like, no, you would shut this city down to the extent you can shut down New York City.
Yeah.
Like, there would be, everyone would be checked all the time. And I want to point out, this is a post 9/11 world, okay?
Yeah, cops would be on the street. Everywhere.
They would be in every subway station.
They'd be spending so much overtime. Like, the only thing I could say is that, first of all, Derek, I mean, the whole made up thing with Derek saying, but we should be doing this. No, you send cops. This goes to your complaint all the time. No, you send cops out to do that.
Yeah.
You've got cops. These cops would all be working double shifts. These cops would be everywhere trying to stop the next one.
Yeah. And again, it's like, the FBI has to be out there. No, it doesn't. You're not going to. How That's is the FBI spot. More necessary to spot a guy wearing a hoodie than the NYPD?
And in fact, the FBI, when it does its little job, which is, i.e. Penelope.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
Who makes these connections, because she...
Yeah, she does the big data work on it. Yeah.
And she says, it's not the same guys.
Yeah. No, they're all different heights. Although, honestly... I feel like if they're that different in height, and like apparently they're like four inches of difference in height, I feel like their own video camera people should have noticed that.
Well, right? I can actually buy that it would take
you're
someone
gonna, you
who is
that.
Really who is really sort of attuned to the spatial distortion in the video, because. You know, they don't always take all of that sort of seriously.
And I guess you're right, but at the same time, they do have specialists who just work with videotape for a living in the NYPD. Like, they have a giant surveillance state inside the NYPD. You don't need Penelope to tell them how to do that.
Well, okay. I mean, yes, we would complain, but, you know, this one I'm going to sort of give them because...
Just give it to them. No, it's fine.
Because there's Penelope, and she brings in a whole bunch of state-of-the-art stuff. Well, yes, probably New York.
The NYPD has got the toys.
State-of-art has got the toys, right?
She's not in West Virginia.
In Bodunk. Okay. She's not in Bodunk.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the FBI is good, but it is a nice scene. I did like seeing her with the NYPD's Penelope. It's a nice scene. Yeah. And of course it does reinforce my theory that Penelope solves all of the crimes for them.
Well, yeah, because she's the one that says, okay. And then they go, oh shit.
Yeah.
So we're dealing with a terrorist.
Yeah. And that's nice.
Yeah.
But, and this is something we're going to talk about next season. The worst terrorist plot in history?
Okay. Hey.
I know.
Spoil anything.
We're not going to spoil anything. If people are watching along with us, we're not going to tell you.
And they have never seen Criminal Minds before.
If
we don't
just
want
here
to tell
because
them.
You want to do a project watching it along with us, that's great. We're not going to jump too far ahead.
No.
But yeah, it's just weird in this episode how long it takes them to get there. Like, they're not watching the street. Nobody did good breakdown on the images. Like, and their profiling gets them nowhere. Like,
yeah, no, they finally, it's Penelope discovers the height discrepancy. So they know there's more than one person. Mm-hmm. And then it's Prentice but he just waited for us to shoot him.
Yeah.
Why is he waiting? He could have gotten away.
Yeah, he was okay. He was just wanted to get shot by a cop.
Yeah.
And by the way, worst reading ever. You know, the tarot card death doesn't necessarily mean death. It can just mean transformation. I'm like, yeah, if you're reading a deck of tarot cards, but if you leave a card with the word death on it at a crime scene where you murdered somebody, it probably just means death.
Well, excuse me, but that's the namby-pamby. Okay, that's the namby-pamby 80s and 90s restructuring of the tarot. Because it used to be if you got the friggin' death card.
As part of a reading, dark things were on their way.
Dark things are on their way. There is a
We've all seen
problem.
Live and Let Die, okay? We know what the death card means.
You know, I mean, even like I sometimes sit down and read tarot, but I can still remember like that there are now it can mean the death of a marriage or it can mean the death of something else.
But it is the death of something.
It is a death card. It's not unless you're doing a full spread where you have a whole bunch of other positive cards, then you could say maybe something is dying, but there's a massive transformation coming. So don't be too upset.
Exactly.
When your father dies, you know.
But the point is, again, if you just leave a card that says death on a body, it means death. It's fine. That obviously means death.
Here's the death card on a dead body.
Do you think, do you think, Aaron, that someone is going to go to the trouble of digging through the tarot card decks to find one that has the tower card that looks dark enough, scary enough, and leave that on the body? Oh, well, this person obviously knew a lot about tarot because they understand that the tower card means the collapse of an order. Like, yes. And I know technically the tower is the worst card, but come on, guys.
Chaos.
Oh, yeah. Tower is chaos. That's what the tower means. And that's great, but it's like, no, sometimes a pipe is just a pipe. So, you know, sometimes the death card means death, guys.
Quoting Freud. Oh.
I know. In this one case, I think I'm allowed.
No, it's okay. I quote Freud, actually.
He's quotable. I don't go to them as the authority on anything, other than occasionally some good quotes.
Well, I'm sure at some point we'll discuss Freud.
We'll do more. Oh, no, more Freud's going to come up on the show. Don't worry. It's Criminal Minds. Freud's going to show up.
Freud's got to show up at some point. Nietzsche's already been there.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just weird how in this episode it is such an inept investigation by both the NYPD and them, because this is fundamentally not a difficult crime to solve. Like, all of the guys dress the same and do the same way. How many times does that happen? Like, do you know how easy it would have been to catch the Beltway sniper if they always, you know, did the exact same thing far more publicly, if they hadn't rigged up a car so they could shoot without getting out of the car? Like, if they had gotten out of their car, walked up, shot somebody, gotten back into their car and driven away, they wouldn't have lasted more than a day or two. And we're expected to believe that in New York City, one of the most heavily policed cities on earth, guys with a frigging uniform can just get onto the subway car and, you know, and just keep shooting people and no one will notice or seemingly be alarmed by it. Again, even if the cops weren't busting, and again, this is the Rudy Giuliani New York of stop and frisk, okay?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's exactly it. This is when Rudy Giuliani was king.
Yeah, like this is the post 9/11 Rudy Giuliani does whatever he wants, stop and frisk New York. The idea that there was a single person allowed to wear a hoodie in public after the second murder is insane.
Yeah.
Like, that just couldn't happen. And they would, and it's like, well, they would have just done up their costume. Yeah, but again, then you would have seen their faces on the screen and they're done. Maybe they would have started wearing masks. Yeah, I don't think cops are going to let people get away with wearing masks. Public.
Yeah.
Like, there's just
they're
no
going to
way
wear
this
it,
kind. Yeah.
You're going to put on a baseball hat and wear it way, way low in sunglasses. You think the cops aren't going to be looking?
Of course they are. That's the thing. It's like, the cops aren't idiots. we can talk, you know, in life about how much idiots cops are in real life from time to time, and cops can do some dumb stuff. But when there's this kind of, again, look at the Boston bombing. They shut down a city.
They shut down the friggin' city.
They shut down the whole city for 3 days, I guess, until they caught the guy.
Yeah.
And they caught the guy.
Yeah.
And they had as much evidence here as they did there. So, yeah. Like, they have this weird conception of how these police investigations are going to work. Because they want to do these really high-profile crimes, but they don't understand the real-life consequences of these kind of high-profile crimes are insane. Whole cities yeah. get shut down. They change people's entire way of life. You can't go in. Hell, you can't. People will get pulled over by the cops for keeping their hands in their pockets. You know?
Yeah.
Like, when civil liberties go out the window, they go out the window hard, and they happen when there's this kind of murder going on. Yeah. So, yeah, like, the whole response to this is so ludicrous that it's almost a little hard to watch. And when you find out what the criminal... when we're back here in 3 weeks to talk about what the criminal's motives were, it's gonna get even dumber.
Yeah. Anyway, so shall we move off, because we
can we just can, oh no yeah we'll talk about we'll retrospect move. No we'll retrospect about the season the whole season in 1 second, but first can we just talk about the ending of the episode now?
No, what I wanted to talk about was all the personal relationships in this episode.
Okay, we'll do that.
Oh my god. Why does Hotch tell Derek what's going on?
That's insane.
Hotch, are you nuts?
You were in the middle of an investigation, and you were giving Derek a piece of information that will cause dissension in the ranks.
Yeah, you have no right.
And not only no right, tactically speaking.
Yeah,
you never behave like this. Tactically speaking, it's an insane thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, there's no upside to doing this.
What? Why he did that? What? Because he's... so this is his... What do they call it after your marriage breaks up?
Your his rebound?
Your rebound? This is not a rebound relationship. This is the girl he wanted to marry when he then married what's-her-face. No wonder the second marriage didn't work.
Ouch. But no, that does seem to be true. But yes, like,
if you watch the episode, that's what you take away from it.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, this is... Hotch is... behaving so out of character.
Yeah, completely unprofessionally. So out of character. I mean, it makes no sense that he would say this to Derek at all.
No.
Like, you just don't believe it from this character. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing? You're making everything more awkward and more dangerous for everybody.
Yeah.
By acting like this. And, I mean, I didn't get why the character was doing that in the least. It was bizarre to me.
And then we have Josh Stewart back.
Oh, isn't it great when Josh Stewart comes back?
Yeah, you know, and then he kind of shows up and, well, you know, and so JJ has to tell everybody she's pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, Josh is going to move up. He's quitting his job.
He's quit his job and he's moving to, yeah.
So then we
get... again, Josh Stewart is the best on this show. Again, we were talking last week about the concept of a zero drama relationship.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too dark here, but he's like... yeah, you've got to get out of the field, JJ. A pregnant lady can't be in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And that proves to be prescient. But that's not going to come up for 8 seasons. No, sorry, 5 more seasons.
Yeah.
Like, it turns out Josh Stewart was dead right about that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry, just,
yes. Ugh, and she's...
makes me so mad.
Now, anyway, but, right, he's... but, yeah, this relationship... now, she says, as she says to him, but we're both cops.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a child. And what are we going to do? And so he says, yeah, and I know your job's more important than mine.
So I'll just quit being a cop.
Yeah, anyway.
It's so great.
You know. Or, you know, I can find another job as a cop, somewhere else. But
it's like, and he does eventually get, I mean, after Henry's born, that's right, I remember their son's name. After Henry's born and they get settled in, he does go to work for the, like... you know, I guess, is he a Quantico, Virginia cop, or is he, like, in the larger city next door?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I guess we have to check. Well, we'll check where the bank robbery episode is set. That's what we can do, because that's where he's a cop.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just don't know if he's actually a cop in Quantico, but he does get a job eventually. But I just, again, it's so great. He flies up to New, he flies up to Washington to, you
To
know,
buy the
start
crib.
get, yeah, to buy the crib and really start the process of moving in, I think is
Yeah.
obviously what he's doing. We can all read that.
Yeah.
And then it's just so great that he immediately hops on a plane to, sorry, hops on a
Plane.
train to go straight to
New York.
New York when he finds out what's going on. I'm like, God damn it, this is the most positive relationship you're ever gonna see. And then they screw with you at the end of the episode. Maybe JJ got blown up. You don't know.
Maybe Hodge got blown up. Maybe
Maybe
Prentice got, because everybody got
Derek
to
got
go
blown up.
home.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what was so, it was just like this kind of, I guess it was supposed to be tense, like
Who got blown up? Yeah.
who got blown up and did anybody get killed and whatever, you know? So yeah, I can
No,
sort of
cliffhangers.
see it, but
But we'll talk about that in a second. But you're right that it's like, it's weird because on this one side of the episode, we have this very positive, very human relationship. And then on the other side of this episode, we've got Aaron acting insanely in a way that's just going to cause trouble just to create artificial drama. So it's
yeah.
like you've got drama specifically being avoided by people behaving in a human fashion. And then at the same time, you've got c totally artificial drama. There's enough crap going on right now.
They
You
don't,
don't need to be talking about this.
you don't need time. You don't have time for this.
No, there's a serial killer slash terrorist organization murdering people in New York. Why are you talking about, you know, not interpersonal, intra-agency deceit in the FBI?
Yeah.
Like, this is not your priority, people. Oh, it's such a frustrating part of the
Yeah, he
episode.
should have never said anything to her. Like, she should, I mean, obviously she shouldn't have even brought it up,
No.
but
She
Hotch
shouldn't have
did.
brought it up. And Hotch, once he knew, sure as hell shouldn't have brought it up. Like, I understand if she's freaked out about trying to be replaced,
Yeah.
I could understand her reaching out to Hotch. Right, I get that. 'Cause again, he works with Derek, he knows Derek, she wants to find out. But the idea that Hotch thinks he should bring that to Derek is crazy. No, it's literally just crazy. And it bothered me so much when I was rewatching the episode.
Yeah, and then there's Prentice and the other cop.
Yeah. Aw,
That was
they have a nice
cute.
little flirty thing. It's cute, but
It's
he's a
cute.
good guy. And even though they're chasing a mass murdering serial killer, he doesn't wear his bulletproof. None of them wear bulletproof vests when they're off on the street.
Jesus.
What is wrong with you people? You know they have small ones that fit under your shirt, right?
Yeah. And do you remember this is New York City after 9/11?
I know. How are you not being way more careful? God. Ah, it's so frustrating. So let's get to the end of the episode, and I'm just going to say one thing that I think everyone knows in their heart, right? But I'm just going to say it. FBI agents don't park on the street. FBI agents do not park on the street around the corner of the FBI building. Are you crazy? Like that just doesn't happen. It could never happen. Four different SUVs just parked up and down the street outside of the FBI building? No, they have a garage. Are you kidding me? You cannot just walk up to a, and to try to imagine this. It is New York. They are in the middle of a terrorist attack. And we are asked to believe that someone walked up to an FBI car in
Put a
broad
bomb.
daylight and opened it up and wired a bomb into the car and then walked away. Now you can say, oh, well, maybe it wasn't wired into the car. Maybe they just put a bomb underneath the car and they were standing across the street and detonated it when they got into the car. Maybe they did, but you still have to believe that someone was able to, with a backpack, walk up to an FBI car in front of the FBI building, crouch down, shove their B bomb under the car and walk away without anyone noticing it during a terrorist attack on New York City. That's insane. Like, that's actually like the cliffhanger of this episode cannot have happened. And that is the nicest, most charitable way to describe the cliffhanger of this episode. Oh, it bothered me so much.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it just capped off an episode that was...
It's a dire episode of television.
Yeah, and I'll just blame it on... you'll just blame it on the writer's strike.
Yeah. No, you're
right.
You blame
everything on the writer's strike.
We'll give him a pass for the rest of the season.
Well...
Not a complete pass.
I don't know. Because this is bringing us...
There's a lot of bad
stuff this year. We're bringing ourselves to... I mean, I don't know when Bernero started working on his new show.
Yeah. Going down thinking about suspect behavior and doing other stuff, but you do feel like someone has taken their hand off of the wheel this year a little. Look at the season as a whole. It doesn't have any of the high points that season two had. There's no profiler profiled, you know. The David's backstory episode doesn't resonate the same way.
There's no Keith Carradine.
There's no Keith Carradine. Like, think about this whole season, right? Was there one killer who really captivated your attention the way Keith Carradine did?
No. Please. Oh, wait. You know who captures your attention? It's Patricia McCormick, right? Ray Donovan's wife.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But she's not the killer.
No.
In 7 seconds. About that because this was so, like, there's a special features. The criminal element, the Making of Criminal Minds season 3 or Killer Roles or something, right?
Whatever it's
And
called,
they yeah. actually talk to the woman who's the killer and how great she is and how wonderful she is. And I'm going.
Back off, buddy. She's not the star of that episode.
Sorry, Erica, but I don't think she was, maybe she was the only villain that was willing to talk on the thing, but no, there were a couple of other of the villains that talked on it, but if I'm talking about standout
performances,
Patricia, it is McCormick, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Ray Donovan's wife.
Ray Donovan's wife is what we need to remember.
What you need to remember. And if you haven't been watching Ray Donovan, you need to.
You should.
Go back.
It's a very interesting show. It was a great show for those first two seasons. Yeah. Then the creator left, and it's just a good show.
Yeah, and it's just a good show now. It's become, but anyway, never mind. The first two seasons were really good. And the rest of it is, no, we're excellent, we're different. And then we don't need to talk about Ray Donovan. Everybody watches Ray Donovan.
It's true.
But anyway, no, she is, if I was to talk about all of the guest stars, she would have been, like, I'm trying to think. Well, Third Life.
Third Life, yeah.
Okay, Third Life is probably...
Your biggest standout of an overall episode this year?
Of all of the episodes this year in terms of... An episode that was relatively tight made sense and left.
No, I think Third Life and 7 Seconds.
Yeah.
Overall, are the strongest two. Just if you look at the beginning, middle, and end, how much of an episode you did, how good of an episode you did. I think those are the two best episodes this year.
Yeah.
I think that's safe to say. There's lots to. Not only is there a lot to talk about in them, but just as a concrete. Them doing the best job of expressing their themes.
Yeah.
Right? Like, each one of them was trying to say had a thesis and led us into a worldview. Both of them were about victimized children in a way, one of them more literally than others. And I mean, as you say, they're both such tight episodes. By comparison, like something like what's the Malcolm in the Middle, Frankie Muniz episode called? True Night?
True Night, I think.
Yeah, True Night.
Right,
True Night is a much looser episode that has a great performance by him, but it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, because the episode is all over the place, you know.
It doesn't hit the way those...
It doesn't. Malcolm doesn't hit the same way. And the thing is that in Birthrate,
yeah,
right, which of course is our favorite, right? W. Morgan Shepherd.
Yep.
Although Bailey Chase was good and lucky.
He was.
Right?
Morgan Shepherd in that.
And Morgan Shepherd was just, really, really, really good.
He is. And we had a lot of good guest stars this week. And I think this year. Obviously, you have to make a statement. The best single thing that happened this year, just best, not full episode, because we talked about that, but the best single thing that happened this year is the battered wife subplot.
Yeah.
In the stalker episode, The Crossing.
Yeah.
The battered wife syndrome episode, subplot in that, is the best single thing Criminal Minds did this year. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, I would say so. Although, as I said, in that run, but that's just a bit. As episodes go, I'm looking at all of these,
You're glancing over the synopsis, you're like, I'm looking. What I want to say is the best one.
Yeah, and I still think, there are other ones, like Children of the Dark was,
it's a tough one.
That was just so tough. And parts of that were so good.
Yeah.
Parts of that, who plays the
Francis Capra's performance?
Yeah, Francis Capra.
Yeah, his performance is really amazing in that episode.
Yeah, his performance was so believable in that episode.
Such a tragic episode on the strength of his performance.
Yeah, so there were episodes that were good, and of course the survivor, the daughter that survives.
Oh my God! Yeah, she's amazing.
Because
even if the episode has problems, they're still getting great actors who do a great job.
Yeah, and I'm going, I'm looking at all, I'm just kind of flipping through here, right? Yeah. The bunch at the beginning. You have to give this season kind of, okay, Bernero got hit with Mandy Patinkin leaving, and then you had to make all of it shifted. And then you had a strike, and of course you have Joe Mantegna having to be
introduced
cast, because by now Prentice is part of the cast, so that's not a problem. So, there are all sorts of things. And then, of course, there's Lucky.
Yeah. Jamie Kennedy's in there for two lines of dialogue.
He doesn't have much dialogue, although he's the villain.
Yeah, almost none. And he's a great visual, but he's got almost no dialogue in that episode.
Of course, season three gave us Kevin, Xander, Nicholas Brendan. So,
as Kevin, and there's like I said, there's good stuff in this season. It's not a terrible season of television.
No, nope.
We're never going to get another Profiler profiled. That as a truth. We're never going to get another Profiler profiled, but there were a bunch of. As someone who is now, because I haven't watched these episodes in 10 years, and I'm mostly familiar with new Criminal Minds, I go back and I watch these episodes expecting them to be terrible, the way modern Criminal Minds episodes are terrible. And going back, I'm like, you know what? No, they had a lot of strong episodes back in the day. They really did.
I'm looking at all of this, and just remember the death row inmate segment.
Yeah.
Watch and read.
Such a beautiful scene. The whole David Rossi half of that episode is just garbage.
Yeah, it's
but
just
that,
garbage.
That but scene. That, that's the high point for what this show can do.
You could take, again, as we said with The Crossing, right? You could actually take that out. As a short film.
Yeah, and just watch that and you get a full story that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's just a short story, right? Yeah. Now, Bernero wrote that. When I'm looking at it, because we were pretty hard on some of these episodes.
Absolutely.
Yet there, it's not as bad. The end ones, the ones after the strike were problematic.
Yeah. We're notably weaker.
Weaker
for obvious reasons.
And as I said, I always gave the David Rossi sort of part. They had their problems, right? that's why Brunero took over that episode, right? Because they probably had to rewrite a whole bunch of it.
Oh,
and
I'm
of
sure.
course he rewrote he did the Hotch Reed thing, and that worked out well. I think
Perfectly.
That replaced a lot of stuff. So
oh yeah, absolutely. So overall, it was, I mean, it's the thing is, it's a troubled season of television, but it came by its trouble, honestly. It really did. Like, it's not the fault of the show that it's got these problems. Like, it just stumbled into this truly bad situation.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the tragedy of this year of television is having to deal with Mandy, having to deal with the writer's strike. Even a show with the best possible crew working on it would have had trouble dealing with the circumstances that Criminal Minds got thrown into. And Criminal Minds, I mean, it's got trouble with writing anyway. So,
you know.
I think it is truly understandable what happened to these guys. Yeah, and it's too bad.
I'm trying to think. Yeah. I think that because I would assume somebody had kind of mapped out 24 episodes, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then
you have to decide
what you're going to cut. And so sometimes, I mean, we talk about continuity. Well, they don't care much about continuity.
Well, I'm going to keep harping on that Garcia stuff whenever I have a chance to.
Well, but there are other things too, eh?
There are plenty of things.
You know, I mean, so what's the worst episode? The last one?
Oh, God, that's so tough. What is the worst episode of the
identity?
Season? It might be Identity. Is the worst episode of the season. You know what? I have to, honestly, like, there have been some low points this year, but I have to give it to the last episode, Lo-Fi. Like, just because the complete lack of logic to all of the performance of every level of law enforcement in this episode of television is just too much to take. Like, I just can't accept it. I like giving the show the benefit of the doubt. I like doing my best to just say, you know, they're trying, right? But no, you just can't. You can't do this, guys. It's too bad.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's frustrating as hell. It's just, it just makes me want to scream how bad that episode is.
Well, yeah, I think
Lo-Fi is the worst episode of the season.
Yeah, because if you put it in, you know, even if you'd put it in another city, but of course... Maybe.
Then the plot would make sense.
Maybe.
Although the plot still doesn't make sense, but we'll get to that later.
Yes, but as we're trying to, this is the end of the third season.
I know, we're not the start of the fourth season, I get it.
Even if
you somehow moved it to another city or something, like just, or maybe don't have there already have been five murders. When they get the call. Maybe they've only had two murders when they get the call.
They've had five.
They've had five when the episode starts. A serial killer killing people every 2 days. A thing that is unheard of in the world of serial killing. And it's happening to not to sex workers living on the fringe of society, but like just regular citizens using public transportation. Like this would be the biggest news since 9/11.
Okay, and the other thing is, we have never had any indication that Hotch has been in contact with anyone else ever.
No.
And all of a sudden, this woman out of the clear blue calls him because she's worried about her job. Because that's why she calls him.
I know.
She doesn't call him because she
thinks
stupid.
It's going to help. Yeah.
Okay, but then we have to go back to doubt.
Ugh. Although that's a season two episode. Technically speaking, it is a season two episode. But no, you're right. We do have to go back to
that. It's in the first...
No, it's in season three. It is season three. They did re-edit it. They did change things. Oh, that alone. Because like you say, I mean, because we talk about how they're infallible and we talk about how like they always do everything right and blah, 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 blah. When you come down to it, like the way that episode... tried to create the concept of doubt in any of their minds and did it in such a half-assed and unsatisfying fashion, it's frustrating.
Yeah. Of course, Scared to Death was a pain in the butt, too.
It's just a bad episode of television.
Yeah. No,
Scared to Death is just a bad episode of television.
Like, I'm looking, I'm going back and looking at these. Okay, yeah. So.
I like how we have this thesis that maybe it was the writer's strike that screwed them up. Wasn't the second episode of the year Scared to Death a garbage hour of television?
Yes, it was the third, but it was a Fisher Messer. Like, whenever they do a good episode, I'm shocked. Right? They did Birthright. And it had major problems with it.
It did. It really did have major problems with it. But there's a bunch of good stuff in there.
But they did do the Crossing episode.
Yeah, they did do the Crossing. And as he said, when we found out that it was the two of them who did the Crossing, we're like, really? Because this is unlike anything they've done up until this point.
So maybe their names are on it.
Oh.
Or maybe Guy Norman B., who directed it.
Yeah, well, actually, we did have that theory when we were talking about it. Yeah. It's like, maybe Guy Norman B. was responsible for all the good stuff in that episode.
Fixed it up, you know.
Maybe. That is entirely possible.
Although, you know, I mean, actually, no, because it doesn't have. Do you realize that it doesn't have any blood, guts, and all that sort of stuff? That's why you're so shocked.
Yeah, because it's not, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I'll just mention it here. When you look at a Messer and Fisher episode, we're like, are women being like excessively tortured in an episode of television, like more than is normal for the show, then it's likely to be one of theirs. Mm-hmm. And that is so absent from that episode.
Yeah. I mean, it is just so completely you wonder whether it's got the wrong name attached to it.
That's honestly how it feels a little. It's weird. But, I mean, let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say they were stretching as writers.
Yeah.
And half of the episode went incredibly well, and the other half was just kind of garbagey.
Yeah, you know, you can do that, I guess.
Although, I think when we were talking about this, last week, we did mention that there's a good chance that the half of the episode that was so good was that the content of that episode was probably drawn from actual real-life testimony of abuse survivors.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it probably was. All right,
It was so sad.
Best thing they did. So, worst episode, I'm still going to go with Lo-Fi. I see, if you want to say that Scared to Death was a worse episode, I'm not going to debate you on that one. It's a terrible episode of television. But I think we can agree that the best overall thing that happened this year is the battered woman syndrome subplot in The Crossing. And I think best episode. I just don't know which one of them to pick. Which one would you pick? Just overall.
Maybe 7 seconds. I don't know.
It's so tough, though. I mean, maybe 7 seconds.
I don't know. Third Life. I really did love
Third Life so much.
I think Third Life is the best episode, but it's 7 seconds is a close second.
It's a close second. We do truly respect the big swinging for the fences stylistic stuff they did with True Night. We will always stand up for the big stylistic stuff they did for True Night.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. It really was. It's one of the most fun things the show's ever done. All right, we're not going to be talking about season 4 next week. We're going to do what we do between every season. We're going to go and talk about something else that is profiling related. And here's a fun twist. It's going to be 2 episodes this time rather than the normal 1. Because we're taking on an entire season of television. Although the show was canceled immediately, so that season is only 8 episodes. But yes, we are taking on an entire season of television. Introduce the show to them.
This is Unsub. And it is created by Stephen J. Cannell.
Television impresario of the 1980s.
Yes.
Stephen J. Cannell.
Yeah, it was done in 1989. And basically, it is the precursor to Criminal Minds.
In a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways.
Here's the fun part. I haven't seen the show yet, so I'm going to find out about it by watching it this week. And I'm going to be back in the next 2 episodes talking with Sheila, who has seen this episode show a couple of times.
Yes, a couple of times. And
so
I'm
very intrigued to see how this goes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say too much. It is clear, right, that Kanell saw Mindhunter and went,
because he spent the entire 80s doing cop and detective shows.
Yeah.
That were, some were great, some were bad, but he was always working, right?
Oh, he's always.
And he made, in this period, the best show in the history of television, Wise Guy.
Yes. And they were actually, anybody wants to go and get it, you can get the Stephen J. Kanell.
Collection?
It's a collection. Now, it only has, for example, the pilot. The two episode pilot of Wise Guy. It has all of Unsub. It has a few episodes of The Odd Other Thing. It has all.
Is this available on Amazon? I just want to ask.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is in the notes beneath this episode, we'll put a link to the Amazon page of the Stephen J. Kanell collection so people can check this out.
Yeah, because the Stephen J. Kanell collection, it has, and of course, some episodes from Greatest American Hero.
Aww. I did love America's Greatest American Hero.
It's got the greatest song.
It really does.
Okay.
But yeah, this is the story of a man who had spent the entire 80s, like, taking weird chances, doing interesting things, and then he saw the movie Manhunter, and he's like... obviously. And then he said, oh my god, there's this whole other level of crime and crime investigation that I haven't even touched on, and so he went and he tried to do it. And I can't wait to find out what the result is.
Okay. And what I would only say, yeah, and I'm not going to say anything except that I was impressed, you know, and the first time. So I've actually watched it, the whole 8 episodes twice. It stars David Soul, Jennifer Hetrick. Richard Kind, M. Emmett Walsh. And then somebody else who is the Derek character. that's all I get. I mean, okay. Yeah. So,
I like that comparison. I'm excited to see what that comparison means.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you'll kill yourself laughing in the very first episode, very first episode. But yeah, it's,
so the show is called Unsub. If you want to check it out with us, there's going to be a link below this episode because we don't think it's really findable on any streaming services. So you might actually have to buy the DVDs if you want to watch it. That's what we did. So we're going to check back. So we'll be back here next week for Unsub.
Yeah.
Then the week episodes 1 to 4. The week after that is going to be Unsub episodes 5 to 8. And then if you just want to meet us back here for Criminal Minds, we totally understand. We will see you in 3 weeks for Criminal Minds 401 to 403.
Yep.
All right. So if there's, if you'd like to reach out, if you'd like to suggest other profiling themed fiction we should watch, if you have any questions or suggestions for us, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We'd be happy to hear from you. And what else? No, I think that's that.
That's that for now.
Okay, if you're enjoying the show, be sure to like and review it on iTunes. Apparently that helps iTunes' algorithm recommend the show to other people. So be sure to consider doing that. We will see you back here for Unsub next week. But until then, au revoir. Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.